Coming to you live from the Buffalo Farm, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always are freshly sprouting buffalo, far as the eye can see, and this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 6.8, Well Heck, You Can't Paint It!
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And we're hosts
of the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
I'm one of the hosts.
And I'm also the other host.
Also that, too, he is.
Yes, and we're not, it's not like one is the host and one is the host junior, we're co-hosts. It's like how in France, all of the dukes were the same. They were just all dukes, and no duke was better than other dukes. Except one duke, he was the king. He got to be the first duke among all the dukes, but we don't have anything like that.
Nothing like that.
No, we just got two dukes.
Two dukes. D-O-O-K-S.
Two dukes duking. That's what we are.
Duke. Dukey.
That's got to be a record on the show for a fastest poop joke.
I don't know if it is. We've probably had one in the intro.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I guess that would by default be the fastest poop joke.
Yeah.
But we're here. We're on the internet. We're doing our thing. I'm, you know, fine.
Yeah, you are.
Hey. Wait till after the show.
For what?
Cupcakes.
Oh, I like cupcakes.
I like cupcakes, too.
I, too, am fine.
So good. We're both fine. And we're here. We're making a show for the internet. So that's good. So tonight's show is about a little bit of a different thing that is tangentially related to several of our interests, but not necessary or the entirety of any of them. That was a garbage sentence. I'm sorry, the internet. But anyway,
the internet forgives you.
We do board game design, which involves getting other people to be aware of your board game design and preferably play it. And maybe publish it and sell it to teenagers who are using their parents' credit card and their mom doesn't know about it, but she's going to be pissed when she gets the bill, Johnny. But we also do podcasts, which involves getting people to read it on the internet. And then they know about it and they maybe respond in some way, shape, or form. So we do these things and they need other people to interact with them. And so we've bumped up against that many a time because neither of us is good at marketing.
Truth.
We're not good at marketing. And we're not good at like regular traditional marketing where you dress up like a big slice of pizza and hand out flyers on a street corner.
And dance and spin a sign.
Yeah, we're not good at that.
No.
Johannes can't spin a sign for beans.
Not for anything.
And I don't have nearly the leg to make a sexy slice of pizza.
Yeah. It's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
We got you that shapewear, but it really didn't.
It didn't. It just didn't. You know, I just don't have.
There's just not enough there to work with,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, maybe if I did more squat thrusts, but that ain't happening.
No.
So we're not good at traditional marketing, and neither of us is particularly good at social media optimization or SEO, as they call it.
Nope. Those are different things.
Really?
SEO is search engine optimization.
Oh. What's social media optimization?
I don't know.
It's a thing, though, right?
Sure, why not?
Okay. We're not good at any of that. And so we didn't bother to actually get better at it. We just stumbled across an article in The Atlantic that kind of tangentially touches on those things. And so that's my lengthy and involved intro to the article we wanted to talk about tonight. The like button ruined the internet. The like button ruined the internet.
You sound like you're proctoring a test for high schoolers. I guess all test proctors do that, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. They have that kind of strange intonation. They have that kind of strange intonation.
It's the worst.
It's not the best. It's so, not the best.
So are you not bringing up the reason that I sent you this article in the first place? Because you don't want to advertise your other...
Oh, yeah, I guess... I guess I'm using my real name for both of those projects, so there's
they're going to find out.
Yeah. So Johannes brought this to my attention, too, because I am the editor-in-chief of Torchlight Media now, which is a volunteer grassroots media empire. I think empire is a fair word for what we're up to.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
That is trying to do some... We're doing news, basically. We're making news articles on the internet and trying to do them well and with quality. And, you know, we have a perspective. We are certainly not attempting neutrality in how we approach things, but we are trying to be as factual as we can manage. And we're still hitting our stride. We're still going, but it does involve a lot of posting things on social media, which involves like buttons. Hence, when Johannes saw the like button ruined the internet, he thought, aha, maybe this article will torpedo Tom's project and his happiness, and then he will be trapped in my nightmare clutches forever. Right? That's how that went?
Yeah, I'm pretty much.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm not actually our social media guy over at Torchlight. I am just a guy. But we do have people doing this, so we thought we should talk about like buttons and how they've ruined the internet on here.
Sure.
So the article is, in, as mentioned, in The Atlantic. So it's over at www.theatlantic.com. We'll also put a link in the show notes.
Yep.
It's by a guy named James Summers, S-O-M-E-R-S, who, according to his byline, is a writer and programmer based in Nuevo Yorko, I believe is the technical name for it.
Sure.
So what jumped out at you, I guess, about the article when you perused it?
Well, there's a lot. I guess the thing that brought to mind the podcast was that he actually directly calls out podcasts a little bit further down. But what he's talking about to start, you know, the grab your attention pitch is the like button ruined the internet. But the little subtitle is how engagement made the web a less engaging place. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how he used to use Google Reader, and some of our listeners may have used that. I know I did, and several friends did, as an RSS reader, like our aggregator for any blogs, news sources, and web comics, and whatever else we read. And a few years back, Google killed Google Reader, and it went away. And you had to find another option to use if you wanted to continue reading things from RSS feeds. And so this guy and his friend both wrote Google Reader clones, starting with basically Google Reader, but his friend added some more Facebooky social pieces to it, like a like button and the ability to post images in the comments. And the author's clone stuck much more closely to how Google Reader originally was, which basically was it had some of that like button social media kind of stuff built into it, but if it existed, like if there was a like button somewhere, it didn't work the way you wanted it to. You couldn't see, you didn't get notified that someone liked your comment. And if you wanted to see who liked the comment, you had to dig through something somewhere. It wasn't readily apparent. Mm-hmm. But his discovery was that he actually liked it better that way because it created...
Just to be clear, he liked it better with the like buttons either non-existent
or broken.
Or effectively non-existent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because what they found was that his friend's RSS reader with all that stuff became Facebook with lots of pictures of cats and just like very on the surface, not a lot of deep conversation, just like fluff comments, where his continued on in the way that Google Reader had been with a lot of deeper conversation because you had to deliberately be engaged in the conversation. You had to make a point of coming back and looking at it.
Right. And it was, I think he said it was slower too.
And it was slower. Yeah. It wasn't a sit there and hit refresh and watch your Facebook newsfeed constantly fill up with new things you can look at. It was like, I'm going to leave a comment here and maybe tomorrow I'll come back to it. Or maybe after lunch, one person will have seen it and maybe had something to add to it.
And from on the flip side, if you saw something you wanted to react to, you couldn't just be like it and then move on. You had to find some way to articulate your reaction that was enough that you felt like making a post. Now, YouTube comments teach us that that even if you have to leave a text comment for a thing or choose to, it still may not be a decent comment. Yeah, exactly. But it is more than just clicking a button, at least.
Yeah.
It's kind of the gist of the thing.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting point. And I think it's got a lot of merit to it in that I've seen this same conversation happen on a forum that I frequent where they have customized reaction buttons And, you know, they have kind of a double-edged sword, I guess. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, they mean there are fewer posts that are just first or like or I agree with this or
right.
or the worst, an up carrot and the word this.
Yeah.
You know? So they scrape off all of that chaff that you would otherwise have. If you can just click agree or awesome or
right.
whatever. But they also don't they don't push you to engage more. Like if in an ideal world, if you didn't have a like button or a reaction button and wanted to interact with the thing, you'd be like, oh, well, I can't just say this. That would make me a chump. And then you would type out a more thoughtful response.
Right.
So it's there's a tension there, I think.
So I actually wanted to bring up, I had it at sort of the end of my notes because it's not directly addressed, mm-hmm. but the difference between Facebook and forums. And I guess, like you said, a lot of the forums have reaction buttons and, mm-hmm. and some of them are just like. And that does sort of, maybe the format's a little different than a comment section too in the forums. But I feel sure. like where Facebook and Twitter fill a lot of the space that a forum, like a bulletin board, mm-hmm. would have filled earlier, like when we were in high school.
In the golden age of the internet.
They do it in a very different way. And
yeah.
so forums still exist. So obviously Facebook didn't just kill all the forums, though I would be interested to see for some of the big ones like the Penny Arcade forums, if they're, if not at least the number of users, if the engagement of those users with the forums dropped as Facebook
mm-hmm.
got more popular. So yeah, I wanted to bring up anyway the difference between forums and Facebook, because I feel like we had that experience. We very nerdily had a set of forums that my brother helped us set up mm-hmm. in high school that was just us and some of our friends. There was probably, what, maybe 15 of us on the forums?
If that.
But we were all on there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all conversation. And it was like, you know, you would read a post if it looked interesting. Generally, I think everyone pretty much at least looked at every post, even if they mm-hmm. didn't really engage in it. And conversed about it, because clicking like wasn't a thing. You couldn't do that, and you wouldn't just see 65 people have liked this post. If mm-hmm. someone wanted to say, I liked that, they had to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if you post a thing on Facebook and you see 35 people have liked this post, I mean, what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a different... It's like a like is a weird non-quantity.
Well,
what does it mean?
That's one of the arguments that happened on the forums I was talking about, the Penny Arcade forums that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
They had, for a while, they had rotating custom reactions to like when, what do you call it? Captain America, one of the Captain America movies came out.
Uh-huh.
For a while, they had Hail Hydra as a reaction button.
Uh-huh.
And you could click it and you could Hail Hydra on that post. They had That's So Raven for a while. After Mad Max Fury Road came out, it was Witness Me. Yeah, Witness Me was a reaction you could do. And those reactions didn't always mean the same thing to everybody, but they
yeah.
also developed a meaning as people used them in weird ways.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. But the sort of classic reactions they have are just agree and awesome.
Yeah.
But if you post a post about your dog getting hit by a car.
Yeah.
And I want to make a reaction that kind of does... There's not a good button for that.
Well, so you know? Facebook has added reactions mm-hmm. now.
Similar.
I've noticed.
And that's a conversation that always goes on around those reactions on the PA forums was, you know, what does that really mean? What does clicking that button imply?
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons they don't ever have negative reactions. Like, the mods are like, we will never have a reaction that is just a dislike.
Yeah.
Because that seems like a good way to breed a crappy, fighty atmosphere.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's tricky.
So, this might be a little too much shoehorning of board games into this conversation, but the first thing I have in my notes, the first rule of social software design, this is a quote from the article. The first rule of social software design is that more engagement is better. And we've talked about engagement in mm-hmm. games, whether it's engagement with the game or player interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It is good. But he goes on to say, the way that you get engagement is by adding stuff like buttons and notifications.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the world of like, I'm designing a social network site. That is kind of like, it's an easy metric for engagement.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's what he's talking about. It's a different kind of engagement. I don't think there's really, I think the parallel to board games ends when you get into that distinction. What would there be in, like, if you had a button that you could press that was like, good move?
Well, I think in board games, it's fiddly mechanics that have you moving a lot of stuff around or doing a lot of actions, but they don't really move you forward in the game.
They're just a thing to do.
Yeah. Like the one that I can think of from an old, and it's not a perfect analog, but I think it gets gestures that they did, is this old game Battle Mist.
Mm-hmm.
I had back in the early 2000s, that it was a hex war game in a fantasy world, and you had your classic resources, iron, wood, and grain. And their means of tracking that were just chips that were worth 1, 5, or 10.
Uh-huh.
And so every round you had to gather that at the start and go to the central stockpile and count it out and fiddle your way through this huge pile. And they're little tiny cardboard chips.
Uh-huh.
And get them all back to your side and then spend them all again immediately. And
yeah.
It was just a lot of moving pieces that, in a way, had you engaged in the game, in that you were doing stuff.
Yeah.
But not good engagement.
Did we talk about, we did an episode after Protospiel this year, right? Where we mm-hmm. talked about some of the games. Like, did we talk about the like oil
yeah.
distribution or
yeah,
whatever
yeah,
it was?
Yeah, we talked about that one.
So one of the things that game had, he was using poker chips.
Mm-hmm.
To signify the different levels of production,
like how many trucks you had, and then yeah. how many trains you had,
and there was a lot of, and then there was also money. I think there was like paper mm-hmm. money that we were moving back and forth and making change, and it felt like to me and to a lot of other people that played in our group, like that was too much changing of a red token for a blue token or whatever. But you actually, not to call you out, but mm-hmm. just to see what you think about this. Really liked, you were like, I think keep that. It is a lot of components and it's a lot of potentially unnecessary fiddling, but I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember having a weirdly yeah. positive reaction to it.
And I guess I don't totally disagree with you in that situation mm-hmm. either, because it was supposed to be about like the changing money, changing hands and things moving from place to place. So to actually be physically moving things around and swapping one for the other did kind of model what you were supposed to be doing in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was unnecessary engagement. Like it was, if you got rid of it, it would just go faster.
Right.
And you could engage in the other aspects of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting comparison to, you know, unnecessarily fiddly mechanics. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it exactly maps, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I like what you were doing there. Good try. Gold star.
Go team.
So. Unless you think of something brilliant, I'm not going to try to shoehorn board games into this anymore because it doesn't.
No, it doesn't quite map. I don't have a good map. For it.
I think this is a forum where we can talk about just creative exploits in general.
Yeah, sure.
So, one of the things the author said, it's a I think it's a quote. So he has a long quote in the article that's a hyperlink to a David Foster Wallace article
mm-hmm.
called E Unibus Plurum, Television and U.S. Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the line is, people tend to be extremely similar in their vulgar and prurient and dumb interests and wildly different in their refined and aesthetic and noble differences. I'm assuming that's a quote. I couldn't. You link to it and it links to like 30 pages of something
Wallace,
of unsearchable text.
Yeah, Wallace was not brief in his work.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen, you've seen copies of Infinite Jest laying around?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I live inside one, is what I'm saying. I hollowed it out with a yeah. pickaxe, and now that's my home.
But I like what he had to say, because what, and he goes on to expound on this point in the article, but basically, if you give that like button, or even a quick reaction, even if you've got 4 or 5 reactions to choose from, happy, sad, mm-hmm. confused, or whatever, having a quick, thoughtless response means, even if you just take it back to upvote, downvote, mm-hmm. if you're looking at something like Reddit, means that you're getting a lot of surface level, meaningless feedback
mm-hmm.
that everyone's going to have sort of the same.
Right.
Like it's saying, people tend to be extremely similar in their vulgar interests and their whatever, and very different in their refined interests.
So that would map to, people are going to be very similar in what they're going to click like on, but very different in what they're going to write a 8-paragraph response to.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And so that means, and then he starts talking about not just YouTube videos, but how this affects the news media. Mm-hmm. And
right. Because if you give me an easy way to react to things, and then that way of reacting to things becomes valuable, so it pushes me to the top of aggregators and the top of feeds and whatnot, so my stuff gets seen and gets yeah. more of those things, it becomes a self-selecting cycle, and people start creating things around getting the thing that gets them to the top of the heap.
Right.
So, and if long, you know, detailed, interesting conversations don't do that, they don't do that, and that's what you're after, you're not going to make the thing that generates a long, detailed, interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hell of a thing. I actually just wrote about this for Torchlight, come to think of it, about how I was doing some research for an article, and there was a study that discussed how in early in primary elections,
mm-hmm.
Media coverage of a person tends to map with their fundraising and their polling,
uh-huh.
how well they're doing in the polls. But those two things also benefit from media coverage. So you do you start doing things to get yourself media coverage that you can do things that get you more media coverage.
Right.
And it gets you this weird cyclical tornado that pulls you forward. But that maybe are you ever doing a thing that is actually the thing you set out to do in the first place? So, yeah, similar, same idea, same kind of thing where the metric, the thing that you're that pushes you forward drives you to behave in ways that are otherwise than you might in an ideal universe.
Yeah. It's another quote from the article, from the author, not someone he's quoting, but a quote of him.
Mm-hmm.
When you're writing in the absence of feedback, you have to rely on your own judgment. And he's saying if you're writing something to post on Facebook, or if you're writing something basically for the upvotes, if you're mm-hmm. writing an article saying this needs to get clicks mm-hmm. to push me to the top of the aggregator or whatever, you're going to then start writing for the audience you know you have rather than writing something that you think has creative merit or has in the news side of things, like information worth putting out there regardless mm-hmm. of how people are going to react to it. That like ability for them to give quick one-off like, dislike, up down, upvote, downvote feedback mm-hmm. is what shapes the media toward this sort of
right. And to spin it altruistically, because that's what I do
uh-huh.
in our conversations, even if you are aware of that whole process, if you're writing something that you think, or creating content, you're like, people should see what I'm doing, and you know that the way to get an audience is to do it, you know, to get clicks, because that's the way it starts to be get in front of more eyes,
right?
Even then, even if you're trying to maintain a pure goal, you wind up tempted to some degree to shape it in order to get, you know, get right. it in front of people.
Well, so I have a funny example of this. Maybe we'll be tipping our hand here, but no one else but us looks at our own rating, so I guess it doesn't right. really matter. Tom and I found out by accident
I know where this is going.
A few episodes ago, that apparently if we put broccoli, the word broccoli, in, and I don't know that it has to be in the tags, because I look uh-huh. back, we had a previous episode that had
Warhammer Age of Broccoli.
Age of Broccoli.
Yeah.
Had inexplicably high listener count.
Yeah.
Broccoli. So we recently we had an episode a few weeks back called Broccolockolockoli. And it blew up. It still has the most downloads in the first week after posting of any episode we've ever done. And I noticed this, and I thought, well, let's try, and I think you noticed it too, because you did it before I even had a chance to tell you to put broccoli again in the meta tags, just to see. And that episode also blew up like crazy.
Why
is that a thing?
Are people looking up nutrition information on broccoli and be like, oh, I think I'll listen to a board game podcast while I'm at it? Or is there
a bot?
Yeah.
Are we getting a lot
that's
of
what I'm wondering.
Like, yeah.
What is there a bot out there that's for some reason looking for podcasts about vegetables and keeps landing? You know what we really need to do to finish this experiment out?
Start changing different vegetables.
Yeah, just like asparagus.
Carrot.
And yeah, let's try cucumber.
Winnebago. Wait, no, that's a recreational vehicle.
I thought it was a province in Canada.
Sure, why not?
We'll go with it.
But broccoli, if you're if you have your own podcast and you're looking to get pointless numbers, then
put broccoli in the name.
That's the trick, it seems.
Apparently. But I would be lying to you if I wasn't tempted to do a lot of broccoli jokes now.
But you know what's interesting, though, is so first of all, because of the way the podcast is,
mm-hmm.
we can say whatever, as we've done the last few times, we can say whatever we want and put broccoli in the meta tags.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really affect our creative output here.
True.
Because they're going to listen, or the robot is going to download it or whatever it is, regardless, just based on that. So it doesn't really change our creative output. If we were writing, it would be different because they can parse text.
Right.
Again, making the assumption that it's a bot.
Yep.
Could do. It's also not super meaningful because either way, we're not actually talking about broccoli. And so it's probably not going to bring in recurring, meaningful subscribers.
If you're Googling broccoli podcast and you find us, you're not happy with that result, probably. Right. Sorry to disappoint.
So where it flips, right, where we could be more tempted to do things, and we haven't been, which is why we are tiny as far as listenership and views. If we were really just doing things that we thought a subset of the internet wanted, so that we could get, because like our listenership, our number of subscribers doesn't really map to anything other than the metrics that we can look at on the website. As far as I know, the number of people who downloaded it doesn't move us anywhere on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play Music. It's the reviews. So if we were just going to shill to people who are likely to go to iTunes and click the 5 stars, then we'd be in kind of in the like button camp.
Sure. But if we're just going to slap broccoli in the tags in every episode, and you bet your sweet bippy we are.
Yep. This time I tried broccoli with a question mark, and so far it's only been up for a day. We haven't gotten the listens we got before.
So they want confidence in their broccoli.
I think they do.
Fair enough. That, I respect that.
Yeah.
I forgot what the sentence I was saying, so I'm going to move on to my next point.
Oh, sorry.
It's fine.
Go on.
Normally, that experience is the other way around, so, you know, whatever. Another point that the author made that I really was interested in was how the like and the sharing and the upvote buttons and all of those things are more impactful on stuff that can be fragmented out. So, like, it's more impactful on an article on The Atlantic or Torchlight or another service like that's text, and that can be shared independent of where it is, of the site it's on.
Right.
So, like, you can read, if you follow the news via your Facebook feed, you can read 10 articles from 10 different news sources and never go to their homepage, you know?
Yeah.
You can do all of these things and just never interact really with the source, but only with little bits and pieces of it.
Mm-hmm.
I go to The Atlantic a lot and read its stuff from its homepage because I enjoy their work. But there's a lot of sites, Washington Post, New York Times, whatnot, that I only ever go to because I get linked to it.
Right.
And I go directly to it. Or somebody upvoted it on Face Reddit or whatever.
Mm-hmm. TwitFace.
Yeah, TwitFace. And that's a really different way of engaging with things because it means that, as the author points out, that each piece of content has to be able to get upvotes on its own.
Yeah.
You don't upvote The Atlantic. You upvote this article. But podcasts like ours, because ours is so amazing and about broccoli, they're contained. You can't upvote just our commercials.
Right.
Or just our opening gag or just one segment or the other. You either have to share the whole episode or nothing.
And actually, if you're reviewing, you can't even just do the episode. You have to review the podcast.
Right.
You could listen to just one episode, but if you're going to go to iTunes or Stitcher or whatever and leave us a review, you're reviewing the mildly alarming podcast.
Right. So no one piece of what we do has to stand on its own. Thank God.
I copied out that whole paragraph.
Oh, go ahead.
Because he put it better. I didn't think I could paraphrase it any better.
Sure.
So he's talking about the difference between bundled content, is what he calls it, blogs, podcasts, and printed periodicals. It's kind of, he doesn't say it outright, but the electronification, which is a word now, of media in general has made what used to be a thing where you bought the newspaper or you bought the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You may even subscribe to those. Now you read an article.
Yeah.
And if you find a place that's like, subscribe so you can read this article, you're like, paywall bastards, I'm not going to read it unless you really, really want to read The New Yorker online or whatever it is. So that's bundled content, was those older things plus podcasts. Where you subscribe and you read, and because we know you're getting your New Yorker every month or however often it comes out, or you're grabbing with your pod catching app the mildly alarming show, and sometimes we have a bit of a stinker, but you hope maybe there's a funny commercial in it or you'll like the next one. Like I wrote down here, I listen to You Made It Weird is one of the many podcasts that I subscribe to, and sometimes they're garbage. And sometimes I skip an episode. Mm-hmm. But I haven't come across one where I was like, this episode was so terrible, I'm never listening to this show again.
Right.
I'm just like, I didn't like that guest, or the host was having an off day. Whatever. We'll move on.
Mm-hmm.
So his here's the quote. Conversely, so in opposition to the bundled media, conversely, when media is unbundled, which means each article has to justify its own existence in the contentosphere, more pressure than most individual stories can bear is put on those individual stories. Mm-hmm. That's why so much of what you read today online has an irresistible claim or question in the title that the body never manages to cash in on. Articles have to be their own advertisements. They can't rely on the bundle to bring in readers, and the best advertising is salacious and exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you end up with 15 great ways to clean your dog. You won't believe number 5.
I'd believe it.
You won't.
I would.
It said that in the headline.
I already believe it.
You can't.
Yeah, yeah, you know, no, that's absolutely the thing. And it's something we struggle with. We're kind of hashing it over at Torchwood is what do we... How do we play to that? Do we not? To what degree? Mm-hmm. How do we do it? It's tricky. At the Mildly Alarming show, we play to it by just making jokes about butts.
Yep. We have quite a bit of freedom here in, mm-hmm. in just doing whatever. Actually, it was another thought I liked. Not knowing what people like, it gives you a peculiar kind of freedom.
Yeah, we don't know. None of you ever respond to the show.
We ask for your feedback at the end of every episode at this point, just because that's how you know the segment is over.
Don't we ask for it twice a show?
Yeah, end of every segment.
End of every segment. Nobody ever leaves comments. Nobody sends emails, tweets, any of it, which is fine. We just keep doing the thing, and if people listen, as we said with the broccoli thing, we have no way of knowing why anybody listens to any one episode over a different one.
We don't have any iTunes. Well, I actually haven't looked. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. I don't get notified about iTunes reviews. Mm-hmm. I have to go look at our iTunes page, which I don't do. Maybe there's hundreds of reviews now saying this podcast isn't about broccoli at all. No stars.
Why does the broccoli thing work?
I don't know,
so
but I
weird.
Love it.
Yeah, you could just do, when nobody's watching, you can do whatever you want. Is that the conclusion here?
I think so.
And maybe people are watching after all?
But they seem to not mind enough to, you know, give us a bad review or tell us to stop.
I feel like...
Other than the FCC.
Did they ask us to stop again?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, just well.
Every time we post and they're like, come on, cut it out.
Screw them.
Yeah. Well, so we'll post this link to this article in the show notes.
Show notes.
And I guess, you know, you could review us or not at this point. I guess it feels weird to ask after discussing this article.
Whatever. I'm shameless. Do it.
Well, if you want to know exactly where to continue not giving us any feedback, one of those places is Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
Another place is email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
And a third is on the website in the comments section at www.mildlyalarming.com. A fourth would be facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
And a fifth would be on Johannes' front lawn at night, holding candles, staring.
Creepy.
Right?
We'll be right back
after this word from our sponsor. This is a Mildly Alarming Radio News Breaking News Break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm Chep Holstein. Good evening. In meat news, the Heine Rump meatpacking plant caught fire today when 1,000 pounds of raw pork managed to clog up a pork grinder. Workers called the smell unbearable and like the inside of old swim trunks as the gooey mass of meat and gristle was heated by the seizing machine. Hot dog prices were unaffected.
In other meat news, a hamburger spoke with the voice of a man at a Heine Rump Burgerium on West Industrial Boulevard Tuesday morning. As local resident Irma Schinfacker bit down, the burger was heard to say, quote, "I'll probably die, but it's fine. It's all fine. I'm ready to go, Lord." Miss Schinfacker commented that the burger was depressing, but tasty.
And in large corporation news, the Heine Rump Corporation has announced plans to make sidewalks out of meat runoff. Heine Rump engineer Leon Quanseppo said that the meat would, quote, set like concrete if you pour it right.
asked about the smell as acres and acres of meat bake in the summer sun. Kwanseppo responded, "It isn't my job to think about that."
It never is, Chep. And in internet comments news, please stop leaving hurtful remarks on our Facebook page. I have to read all of them, and it really bums me out.
I didn't know anyone left comments on our Facebook page.
Yeah, all the time. Take a look.
But I only have 10 fingers. Charles is wrong.
Well, that's the internet for you. This has been your mildly alarming radio news breaking news break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm a big poopy doo-doo head, according to Lisa F.
Dude, seriously? Are you going to do this right now?
Yes.
Fine. Good evening.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're glad to have you here with us. How you doing?
Me or them?
Whoever.
They can't respond.
Just love me.
No.
Oh.
Okay.
Yee! we have to link to it now.
I guess we do.
Yeah, okay.
We'll link to this horrible video that you will not appreciate in the show notes.
I think you'll appreciate it.
Well, you think wrongly.
Oh, okay. But welcome back to the show. We're glad to have you. We're here on the second segment. We talked about a thing in the first. We're going to talk about another thing in the second. That's how it goes.
A different thing.
Works. Mm-hmm. This segment is a segment we've done before, but it's been a while, I think.
It's been a little while.
So it's called Board Game Smash-O-Rama. Do you think they're done singing yet?
I hope so.
Okay, good. Board Game Smash-O-Rama is a segment where we take two board games and we beat them against each other, and eventually we have a good board game that comes out of it, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course it's good.
It's always
good.
We're
board game designers.
It's everything we do is good. We poop gold and pee bricks.
That sounds excruciating.
Depends on the size of the gold bricks.
I guess.
If you pee really tiny bricks, you're probably
okay. I feel like that would still not be super pleasant. You know?
Well, you know what? You have a closed mind. That's what I'm saying. You should be open to new experiences.
Just not that open. Like, not brick-sized.
The worst podcast on the internet. So tonight's board games we want to smash together are Settlers of Catan, the classic game of being really mad because the dice just keep not giving you any resources, and Time and Space, the real-time game of trading in space, but then Gary forgets the rules, and so you have to spend 30 seconds of your very limited time explaining how it works. And now you're upset.
That is not my favorite part of that game.
No. But they're both really good. So Time and Space, for those who don't remember it, it is a real-time game where you use hourglasses to do your actions. So if you want your spaceship to go from planet A to planet B, you move it and then flip an hourglass on it. And when the hourglass runs out, you can then do another thing with that hourglass. And you have two hourglasses to use to run all of your stuff, all of your building, all of your trading, all of your ships flying around.
Do you remember that? I guess it doesn't really matter. Are they 30 seconds or 60 seconds?
I think they're 30 seconds, because I think the game is only 10 minutes.
I think it's 17 minutes. I think the...
Oh, right, because they had a practice game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really good. We really like it a lot. And so we wanted to put it into our Super Collider with Catan and see what happens.
So we just need to warm up the Super Collider. I wish you had told me we were doing this, because that takes hours.
It's fine. It's all
it seems to be wubbing along nicely now.
I don't know what you mean takes hours. All you have to do is, you know, the switch, the red switch, you flip that in addition to all the other ones and you're fine.
You've never told me about the red switch.
Well, I mean, duh, it's red.
Usually means don't flip this.
Yeah, but why? No, red means flip away.
No, red means like this will shut it off or potentially blow things up.
No, red is the color meaning do the thing. That's why whenever I see one of those red octagons when I'm driving, I just gun it.
And whenever you see red berries in nature, you just eat them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to die probably.
I don't see why.
I can tell that you don't. Let's toss the board games into the Super Collider.
Thump. Thump.
You're saving me a lot of time on Foley for this episode. I'm good with that.
So first up, I think one of the things we need to do is address some of the base problems with Catan, because Catan has aged and not entirely gracefully.
Okay.
The basic problem I have with Catan, and that whatever our redesign would need to fix, is that there's a lot of circumstances where you have just dead turns, mm-hmm. where the dice didn't do anything for you, and so you don't get anything, and so your turn is nothing.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Well, before we go too far, though, do we need... If we're going to smash these games together, time and space is real time,
mm-hmm.
and everyone is playing at once using sand timers. So how worried are we about dead turns if a dead action
no, that's a good point.
Is only going to take 30 seconds?
That's a fair point.
It's still disappointing. It's a waste of a timer flip,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think there's... Unless you screw up yourself, there's nothing in time and space right now that's a waste of a timer flip, and I feel like it's something that game could support, especially sure. if you extend the length of a game
mm-hmm.
slightly to 20 minutes, 30 minutes, but it'll still be less time than a game of Catan would have been.
It's probably true, yeah. I guess one easy way you could combine them would be to give each player a sand timer that they have
mm-hmm.
and set up the Catan board as normal, except instead of rolling dice to determine which territories produce.
You have to run a timer on it to produce.
Yeah, and then that's kind of cool because the way Catan works, for those who have somehow listened to a board game podcast and never played it, you build the territories are hexes, and you build cities and roads along their edges. So I might have, Johannes and I might both have cities on a given hex that I want to produce on. So if I run my timer on it, it might also be giving him resources.
That's interesting, because so far we'd just come up with, you know, if you run a timer to produce resources, that's already how it kind of works
mm-hmm.
in time and space. But if it's on a Catan board, then yeah, you have to gamble between producing resources and then for yourself and giving them to someone else also.
Right. So that's kind of neat.
I like that.
I'm already interested to see how that would play.
So should we also have either carts? I mean, I guess we need to just for the sake of terminology, let's decide now. Is this in a sci-fi setting or a Catan setting?
I like sci-fi settings better.
I do as well.
So
you have ships, and these are hexes are now star systems or
sure.
planets or something. We'll call it planets. So in order to trade... Right, in Catan, you can trade with anyone,
mm-hmm.
and you can also trade with no one at a reduced rate.
Yeah, you trade with other players at whatever rate you can negotiate, and with the general market, I think
4-1.
4-1, unless you've got a specialized port, then it's 3-1.
Yeah, if you have a port, it's 3-1, sometimes 2-1. Actually, the ports, I think, are marked. Mm-hmm. So the way you trade in time and space is you move your ship to a planet,
mm-hmm.
and you can... What is it? You can... Sell. It's interesting, right? Because you have a home world and you have a ship.
Yeah.
And I always lose track in just recalling the game of which thing can do what, because you can't do both, right?
When you get your... If your ship makes it to another player's home world, you can sell goods that you have made and that you have to fulfill demand that the other player has. So, like, if you've got demand for brown...
Mm-hmm.
I can fly to your planet and then give you brown. But if you've got demand for blue and all I have is brown, there's nothing we can do for
you. I think it's
other.
The other way around. I think the ship can only pick up
goods and then brings it back. It's been a while since we played.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So one of them creates orders and all your board, it looks like a ship, but it also mm-hmm. involves your planet. So it's a little confusing.
Sure.
But so do we want to keep that, or do we want to just say you can trade both ways with a player, but you have to have a ship at their planet? I feel like that's simpler.
I feel like that's probably simpler, especially since we've now used the timers for production.
Yeah,
so it's going to be hard
taken
to,
away.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to use them elsewhere. Although I do like the idea that the star system we're all in
mm-hmm.
becomes less productive because I've invested all of my resources in upgrading my own stuff instead
yeah.
of producing things.
Sure.
And so, like, you might not be getting as many resources because the other players aren't activating planets.
Right. Now, do we keep roads? Are roads important
in
enough?
Sci-fi, it's less so. I mean, they could be like wormhole
routes. You could make them you could make them wormholes or trade routes or mm-hmm. homing beacons, but the question is really, is that mechanic important? In Catan, there are roads that you can build. Excuse me, there's victory points for... Are roads worth anything other than connecting, except for the longest road card?
No, longest road, and you have to build them to build.
Yeah, so you can only build settlements along your mm-hmm. own road.
Yeah.
Do we need that, though? Or do we just say...
I don't really think we do.
Okay.
No, I don't really think so. I think you just need to be able to build like space stations above planets and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, do you need a rule of any kind about where you can't, like, could I spend my first several, not really turns, but timer flips. So I'm on my side of the, we're sitting across the table from one another. I've got a settlement on a planet on my side of the board. I spend like my next three or four timer flips or however long it would take to get across that board to get to the other side and build another settlement. I don't know why I would do that, but can I do that? Or do I have to build roads to connect them? Because I think part of the roads is to try to keep everyone from gunning from the high number valuable hexes.
Right.
And we, I guess we don't, I guess the limitation of the movement of ships. So I'm answering my own question and tell me if I need to change it. You have to have a ship somewhere in order to build a settlement.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just settle a world where you don't have a ship.
And it takes a timer to move your ship around.
Right, and it takes a timer to build the settlement. Mm-hmm. So you're tying up resources. You don't have to deal with roads that takes a resource out of the picture that would have been unnecessarily complicated, I think, in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
But you might then say you need to build more ships. Does that make sense? Does that work? So the next question is, are you still limited to two or three? So it's two timers in time and space. Are you limited to two timers?
I think you start with two and then you can upgrade to a third.
Okay.
Through some weird path that lets you do that.
And is there any compelling reason to color code timers? I'm just trying to think. Can two people be running a timer on a hex?
I think.
Because I know there's shared production.
Mm-hmm. You probably need to color code timers just so you can keep track of whose is whose.
And that's simple enough with a base. They don't,
yeah. Because in time and space, for example, all of your timers are always on your own components, so they can look the same and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But here, your timers might not be clearly on something of your own. Like if they're on a planet, it might be easy to forget which one was yours. So I think, I think we want to color code them. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. The number of colonies you can have is already, I think, fairly effectively limited if you keep the same rule of it can't be adjacent
mm-hmm.
to any other colony.
Yeah.
So just put enough parts in to allow for that. You have to have ships on a planet to trade. Can ships trade with one another? That introduces a problem of what. Well, I guess it potentially introduces a problem of, is the ship carrying all of the goods at once or are some on the planets?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we've already kind of said we don't care about that all that much. Because if a ship can trade both directions just by being at any given planet, that means the ships all have to have access to everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably works fine.
It's probably okay.
Because we've added enough complexity with the sort of kind of area control elements of Catan. That some of the limitations of who can do what where that were in time and space don't need to be there.
Mm-hmm. I guess what's the victory condition here? Catan is just a straight victory point rush.
Yeah, it's interesting, I guess, because the thing about time and space is that you play till the end of the timer and then everyone kind of scores out and there's all these kind of neat little ways that what you've sold versus what you've tried to sell versus what you still have not ever, you know, orders you've never even attempted to fulfill. Like that your victory points kind of work out. You have to keep track of it, but it's not really competitive. And I kind of wonder if the game needs to keep that, because that's part of why time and space works, is that like I'm happy to trade either way with you because I need to get orders out as much as you need to get orders fulfilled or whatever.
Yeah.
And if it's just a rush to victory points, you could very well win just by saying, I happen to get all of the good spaces on the hexes that produced these, and I'm not going to trade them with you. And so you're just hosed.
Mm-hmm. What if we did a mechanic whereby, I'm trying to think how I want to do this, where instead of upgrading your space stations, like in Catan, you go settlement to city, and that makes them produce more.
Right.
You have like a pool of population that you're trying to spread across the stars. And so you can take actions to put them on planets.
Okay.
And so then like, suppose you and I both have people on a planet. We each have a space station in orbit and we have a population on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that determines how much we get when that planet activates. And having your own space station in orbit. And oh, no, I got it. Okay. So you don't have to have a space station in order to put population on a planet.
You just have to have a ship there?
You can have your ship just drop them off. And that means that you might be able to score off planets that I have a space station on just because you seeded some settlers on them.
Hmm.
And your settlers are still there. And, I mean, I might get a bonus for having a space station in orbit above it. Like, maybe you can't activate it uh-huh. if you don't have your own space station, but you could still score off it. So then you've got an option of, do I spend my time building space stations and have planets I can activate and know I'm going to get? Or do I spend my time dropping settlers off on Gary's planets
mm-hmm.
so that I can leech off of him a little bit?
But he's the one who has to run the timer.
But I won't get it unless he runs that timer.
I kind of like that. I'm a little worried about going too fiddly.
Sure.
One of the things we haven't really talked about, we talk often about how, you know, where the line is between video game and board game, or mm-hmm. like board game with app integration. And one of the things that video games allow you to do that you can't do in a board game, outside of just having a computer that's going to track resource production and like make sure that if Gary runs his timer to produce things over there on a thing where I have settlers but don't have a base,
mm-hmm.
I get my resources even if he doesn't tell me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the, like, especially in real time, the more real time things you have to keep track of in real time, the easier it is for players to cheat
mm-hmm.
or accidentally cheat. Even.
Right.
Just to be like, yeah, I have a thing there and I have a thing there and I have a thing there. Like the first time I played Time and Space, even, which is relatively simple for a real time.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two or three things to keep track of, two timers. The first time I played it with, taught it to my wife's family, my wife's younger sister, it looked like she won pretty handily. And I was surprised. I was like, oh, you did a pretty good job. And it was because, like, she just totally missed that you have to run a timer to produce goods
mm-hmm.
or to pull orders onto your ship or something. It was like a significant step. Like, she couldn't possibly have made that many points.
Sure.
But because it's real time, no one was paying attention. And I'm teaching the game, but also trying to play. So I couldn't be keeping an eye on what she was doing.
Sure.
So you don't want to have too many things, because you don't want to create avenues for intentional or unintentional cheating, I guess, mm-hmm. is what I'm getting at.
That's a good point.
There's a lot to lose track of in a game, period. There's a lot more to lose track of when everyone's taking their turns at once.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at how hectic Space Alert gets,
mm-hmm.
where you're all working toward the same goal, try adding that many things to do, but you're also all competing.
Or even Captain Sonar.
Yeah. So I like the idea, but I imagine probably in playtest you would find we just can't deal with a differentiation between two styles or three styles of settlement or settlers.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought anyway.
Yeah, we'd have to see how it goes. How do you feel about resources then? Do you feel like it needs the divvying up of different types of resources that Catan has, or is it good with, you know, just maybe one type or maybe two, or you know, try to condense it a bit?
I think I would condense it, especially if you're going to make it so that you have to, like, we still need to figure out a victory condition. If it's most points at the timer, that's one thing. If it's the Catan style, like, first to this, like, Catan's hard to do, right? Because Catan is first player to 10 points on their turn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible you could reach 10 points, but it's not your turn. And so someone else could get there first.
Right.
And that kind of locks it. It changes the strategy. If it's first to 10 points in real time, it's just like, I got 10 points, and that ends the game.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to figure out if there's a timer to end it, and then, or if it's the other way before we kind of, because if it's first to 10 points, you're basically never going to want to spend resources you don't have to, regardless, I guess, of if there are different types
mm-hmm.
and what translates to victory points.
Sure.
Where if it's on a timer, you may say, I'm going to burn all of my resources right now to do a thing, to build a settlement or to build another ship
mm-hmm.
because it'll pay off. And I think I can gamble that or I can plan, mm-hmm. I can strategize that in the time that I have left and the number of flips of the timer I think fits in that, I can still do enough to get my victory points back.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, you know, in Galaxy Trucker, when you're doing the setup phase or you're building your ships,
mm-hmm.
how there's that mechanic where the timer flips, but it only flips when somebody notices it has to flip and flips it.
I like that.
And so you have to run it three times, but it might sit idly for
three minutes or whatever, depending on how focused people are on building
the
ship.
What if the overall game length was built around that? It's like, here's the timer, the master timer. It has to run
three times,
but it doesn't flip until you flip it.
I like that. I think that's good. And I forgot about that mechanic, actually. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so that way there's, you know, if you're off to a really rushing start at the beginning, you might be like, I'm going to flip that right away. But if it's everybody's going, having a slow, awkward start,
yeah,
you might not.
And you might even notice and be like, I'm not going to say anything as long as no one else does.
Because mm-hmm. it's to my advantage not to.
So we would have some sort of longer timer.
Yeah, maybe like a
for the overall game
length. Yeah, maybe like a 1 minute timer for that and a certain number of flips it has to do and like a track to put it on.
Yeah.
And then maybe 30-second timers for the actual.
I'd probably go with longer than 1 minute. Like, I like the three, you know, you don't want to have to keep looking at the 1 minute timer and have a game that drags on forever.
Yeah.
I hate a game that's like either I'm clearly winning or I'm clearly losing or I just have lost patience with this game and I need it to be over. Mm-hmm. But there's five more rounds or five more flips of the timer. Like, I need one that, you know, isn't going to be lengthened because we mm-hmm. forgot to flip a 1 minute timer 20 times.
Right, right.
So like a 10 minute timer three times sounds better than.
Could you buy 10 minute sand timers?
Well, it might not be a sand timer. It might be
an app.
Though if it's an app, it's going to beep when it ends. So it's something to figure out.
I'm just Googling them right now. I see 2 minute sand timers.
Yeah.
That might work.
Yeah, it would be a pretty big, probably expensive, and actually glass hourglass if you're getting to, you know,
like that's
five,
a cool
10,
that's a cool
minutes.
Thing to sell.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Not everyone has one sitting around though, and the problem really is that if you go use whatever timer you have around that allows you to set 10 minutes, like if you're setting a kitchen timer or your phone timer, it's going to beep at 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and so you lose the flip it when someone notices.
You
that it's
you
out.
Really need a standardized timer for that mechanic to work.
But since we are not making this, let's just pretend that we have a 10-minute sand timer.
Sure, that works for me.
So now we're back to the question of, we're also pretty short on time here, but...
Of how do you win?
So how do you win, and also what do we do about resources?
I think just a simple, like, wealth-type resource is the way to go. Credits, or whatever you want to call
you
them.
You think a single resource?
One or two, probably.
Okay.
I'm not sure about victory conditions. I don't want to do just victory points. But I'm not sure what else to do with this kind of thing.
I feel like since it's Smash-O-Rama and not remaking the game, we have mm-hmm. to go with victory points because that's what both of the other games use.
Okay, so what do we reward players for? Space stations, number of planets you have people on.
Yeah.
I
think a ship should be worth a point.
Maybe? Are you able to build a lot of ships? I guess.
You could probably build a lot of ships. I would say if we're limiting them to three timers, it's probably not worth having more than two.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see a reason not to allow it. You know, you could have three. You could be like, I'm not going to produce. I'm going to bank on other people wasting their timers on production on hexes that I share and fly my ships around and ride a bike around, etc.
And so forth.
Right.
Ships should be able to somehow produce resources from non-planet hexes. Like, that should be their special power.
If you wanted to get really nitpicky, ships should cost resources to send a certain distance, but I think that's probably too much to keep track
of in
real time.
That's a little tricky, yeah. They're solar-powered.
By the sun.
That's what that means, yes.
Yeah, there's terrible church signs are a thing that I find entertaining.
Yep.
And one of the ones that is one of the worst says solar powered by the sun, but sun is spelled S-O-N,
mm-hmm.
and that's a terrible church sign.
It's not the best pun.
But that's what I think of often when I hear solar powered
mm-hmm.
by the sun.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I think there's a lot of cool mechanics in there that we should make. We should take it to Frodo Spiel this year.
And then get sued by both whoever makes Catan and check games.
You can't copyright game mechanics.
Well, that is true. But still, like, come on.
Given that we explicitly talked on the internet about what we wanted
about
to do.
Exactly how we came about. I don't know. If honestly, I do like the idea. And if we could do it without either half of it being too much of a direct ripoff of either mm-hmm. of those games, I actually think it is probably unique and might be worth working on. But I don't know if we can do that.
I'll kick together some rules, see what we can do.
It's worth thinking about, I guess.
Sure.
Well,
if you like butts and pooping,
let's
wrong
face
podcast.
It, who doesn't? Oh, that is the other podcast.
Our secret podcast.
It's a secret. Don't look for it at a web address I have yet to register to make this joke continue on into the foreseeable future. But if you like board games, you could tell us that. on Twitter at mildlyalarming.
You could tell us that on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or on the website in the comments section at www.mildlyalarming.com. Or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can rate and review us. I can ask you in this segment because it's not the other segment. On iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music.
Do it with your mouth!
Cool, see you next week, bye.
This is a Mildly Alarming Radio News Breaking News Break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin, good evening. No, I am not rushing through it, Jim! In Facebook news, would whichever one of you called Chep Thundermittens on Facebook please take it back? He's hiding in the closet because he is, quote, afraid that he'll zap me like the bad guy in Star Wars.
He was a scary man, Reg. I don't want to be like him.
It's just a movie, you freaking yes, Jim. I know I can't swear on the air. Just tell Chep he doesn't have Thundermittens. Please?
Good evening.